Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. My name is Dino Ray Ramos.
And I am Amanda Nduka. And you guys, we have a very special guest for this podcast, Dino.
I think this is an amazing podcast. We have Niall DeMarco, who's creator, executive producer of Def U. And you know what? You may recognize him from America's Next Top Model, because that was pretty much his breakout. Then he won that. Then he was all, I don't think that's enough. So he went to Dancing with the Stars. And then he won that. And now I think what is amazing is that he's doing such amazing things for the deaf culture, deaf experience. And he opened our eyes to a lot. Well, the show opened a lot of our eyes.
I really encourage people to watch it. I mean, it's something that, you know, you just never think of like really investigating other cultures like that much. And I think this show really gives you a good look at this community that a lot of us don't really know of. And it's so fascinating. It's so interesting. And I started a podcast, I actually feel like a better person knowing what I know now than, you know, versus my ignorance. So, yeah. I mean, obviously I'm still, you know, we're still learning and the show can't really encompass the whole experience
of the
linguistic community, but it's really good. It's a great insight.
And I think it just shows how like there are so many underserved communities out there that deserve our attention, that deserve our storytelling that isn't being noticed. And I think it's great that Niall is kind of leading that charge. I mean, there are probably many others, but I like how we talk about this in the podcast. And also there's video you'll be able to watch about how it's just constantly, you know, when it comes to the deaf community, deaf experience, it's always like a PSA episode, like, look, you know, it's, you know, this is our deaf episode with our deaf person, but this just kind of goes beyond that and shows the nuances, the layers and the different experiences of this community and also the issues they face within their own community, which is just so fascinating.
Honestly, it's reality TV. It has everything that good reality TV like has. So
it's just good TV, period.
TV and it's very, like I said, it's very informational, very eye-opening and very interesting and relatable. And like you said, I think we're coming to a time now, and hopefully it gets more that we're seeing more and more of these contents from traditionally marginalized communities coming to like a Netflix or something, and we're learning more about these cultures. So hopefully we'll see more from Niall and from a lot of other people. But without further ado, here is Niall. Well, I want to start by welcoming Niall to Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. Welcome and thank you for being here.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you both.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to chat about your Netflix docuseries in a little bit. But first, we want to get to know you. First of all, let me ask you, how have you been during this time? I mean, obviously, 2020 is very, I think we all have a lot of adjectives to describe 2020.
Triggering is one of them.
how have you been?
Triggering for sure. You know, I'm doing well. I mean, obviously this is just a rough time getting used to. As a deaf person, you know, who lives 99% of my time in the hearing world, I'm very used to having to lip read. Now with masks everywhere, I'm totally lost. Yeah. So I mean, it's been a frustrating experience. Overall, I'd say an interesting journey. I'm starting to get used to it now. You know, once in a while I can tell that someone's yelling through their mask, and I'm just like, I can't even tell. I can't even see.
So now you have experience with smizing, right? Because you could read eyes and. Have you seen those masks where there's plastic and you could see their lips, mm-hmm. which looks scary.
Honestly. I have no opinion. So, you know, the clear masks, they're nice, but they get so foggy and gross. It's like all condensation inside and like, it's nauseating. I'm like, yeah. I don't want to see her spit on clear plastic. You know, I mean, it's very thoughtful, very nice, but right. No thanks. Don't do it.
So obviously we remember you from America's Next Top Model. Sorry, I can't talk today. And then also with Dancing with the Stars, and we've seen you on a couple of series, and you have a couple of projects in the works. But I want to ask you, where did this all start for you? What gave you sort of this aspiration to be in this business, or who inspired you?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, really. My first break was America's Next Top Model. And from that experience, you know, obviously, I, like anyone, I was wondering kind of what my plan was and how to move forward in the industry. When I made it on Switched at Birth, you know, that really was the first hint for me that I really enjoyed acting and I wanted more of it. You know, and then, of course, Dancing with the Stars happened. And the interesting thing that I started to recognize was a pattern, right? From America's Next Top Model and also Dancing with the Stars, that both times I was really cast on screen as this kind of one-dimensional figure. And all of the questions that they would ask me were specific to my deafness, right? And how I grew up as a deaf person. It was never really, you know, a deep dive into who I was as a person or things I actually enjoyed. So after doing two reality TV shows, I felt like still nobody really knows who I am. But I did want to fall into acting more. I was really interested in it. And I realized that developing TV shows and films was an opportunity for me to stretch the boundaries and show hearing people exactly who deaf people are and show how rich the deaf community is and that we have so much to offer, you know. But I mean, that's really how Deafy was born.
How has it been sort of going from being in front of the camera to being a creator and an executive producer and being behind the camera? What's that transition like been for you?
Wow. I mean, overwhelming. this is, you know, a first time for me, right? I mean, it's a lot of responsibility, you know? You've really got to find a way to encapsulate what the deaf experience is. And truly, it's impossible to do it as one deaf person. I mean, we just need so much more representation, you know? But overall, the experience has been euphoric, you know? It's not many deaf people who have the opportunity to, you know, executive produce in Hollywood. And, you know, we're hoping that this really is the first of many, right? I don't want to be the only deaf creator in Hollywood. I want to see more and more creatives coming up as EPs and creating their own shows.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, so like when you were coming up, or when you even just growing up, or even lately, or in your recent career, when was the first time you saw yourself authentically represented on TV or film?
Deaf you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, really, Deaf You was such a powerful moment for me. Mm. You know, after watching, you know, the episodes, I was laughing, I was crying, I had so many emotions because my entire life I had never seen a real, raw, authentic look at who I was in representation on TV. And that made a real impact in my own life. Right? If I would have had that as a child, oh, so powerful.
Where did your, you know, you're an advocate, you know, for the deaf community and for the queer community and for so many people, but where do you think your advocacy came from for underrepresented voices?
You know, I mean, I would say my identity as you know, as a deaf person, was very strong. I had a really strong deaf identity growing up. You know, and I remember always thinking that, you know, that was just who I was, right? My deaf identity was really sort of in front of everything. And it was, you know, primarily deaf. And over time and through my own journey, I realized that there was no possible way for me to split my identity into something so insular. It was really important that I kind of recognized my own intersectionality in so many ways. Through that, you know, truly in Deaf U, we see that happen, right? In the casting process, you know, it was really key for me to be able to see LGBTQ representation. It was so critical, because I think it's so easy to think about deaf representation first and leave it sort of siloed, but the deaf community has so many more layers to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, going to that, you know, there's so many marginalized voices who haven't been represented on film, on TV. And, you know, I think the deaf community and, you know, there's the disabled community, there's so many people who haven't seen themselves. And if they have seen themselves, it has been kind of, you know, not so good.
Yeah, very stereotype or very one-dimensional.
Yeah. But what is one or a couple of popular misconceptions about the deaf community you want to bring awareness to? Now's the time on this podcast to tell, you know, the people, like, what you want people to know about the deaf community that they sometimes get wrong.
Sure. Generally, I would say, you know, the biggest misconception is that there's no such thing as the deaf community or the deaf culture doesn't exist. A lot of people don't understand how it's possible because they consider deafness strictly a disability. And they're like, well, disability, you know, or the disability community doesn't have a culture. And it's like, well, yeah, we could consider it a disability, but we're also a linguistic community, right? I mean, it's how we essentially build and evolve culture, right? Through the passing down of stories, through our own language. So I'd say that's probably the biggest misconception. I remember one time when I was on America's Next Top Model, I was working with one of the interviewers and, you know, there were all these questions about my deaf identity and my upbringing. And it was just constant. And she said, you know, do you remember in fifth grade, you told us you went to a mainstream school briefly? Were you hurt? Tell us how you were sad and upset in your struggle. And she was trying to make me cry, right? I mean, it would have made much better DV, I'm sure. And I told her, I was like, look, you're not going to make me cry because truly, I'm not going to cry about being deaf. I love being deaf. Mm-hmm. I came from an all deaf family in a deaf school in a community. And the woman ended up crying and she said, you're making my job so much harder. And I'm like, but why do you think that deaf people can't possibly be happy and live these really great, fulfilling lives? You know, that's what we wanted to showcase with Deaf U. We wanted to really break the mold and kind of break away from those misconceptions and really educate people on deaf people's everyday lives. I mean, we cover topics like, you know, abortion and sexual abuse and domestic violence and romance. I mean, things that are, you know, very universally relatable to the larger community.
Yeah. I have to say, I learned, I mean, I was captivated. I finished it like in one setting. I learned so much and I'm so happy that I was exposed to something like this because obviously like you don't ever think about, you know, like you said, like there's not that many, we don't have representation as a problem in this country and in this world. So we don't get to like experience a lot of people and a lot of like their lives and we just kind of make up our own decisions based off of what we know, which is very limited. So this was very wide open. Like you said it before, like you just had so many different people. And I want to ask you about the cast because it's, you know, I didn't know that there was an elite group. Obviously I didn't know that there was, you know, there's so many issues that you guys really talked about that really like really, brought an awareness of like there, you know, there are people who don't believe that they are part of the deaf community because they speak, you know, that to me was such an eye-opening, like, you know, information. So
right.
can you talk about going about choosing the people that you wanted to be part of this series?
Sure. Yeah. So now, when I first found out that Hot Snakes, the production company behind this, was developing a show, specifically Gallaudet, I wanted to reach out. I didn't actually know what the show was about. When we did finally get connected, my team had called over and said, hey, you know, Niall actually is an alum of Gallaudet. He would be a great voice to get involved. Mm-hmm. you know, definitely in bringing a more authentic deaf lens and showing the deaf experience. And I had a chance to chat with them. They had already chosen the cast at that point. And, mm-hmm. you know, they had videos of some people signing and I'm watching it. And I asked one of the producers, I said, you know, do you know that some of these casts can't actually sign well? And he said, oh, is that serious? What does that mean? What do we do? And I'm like, well, their language fluency is a part of who they are in the community, right? They might've been latent deafened or, you know, it might be someone who is, you know, born and raised in the deaf community, or perhaps someone who is, you know, culturally deaf, but went to a mainstream program, or maybe their parents didn't know sign, right? Or it's someone like me who had the deaf community and had deaf schools and deaf parents and language fluency. And it was that moment of awareness that really kind of shifted the dynamics of the show, right? So with that in mind, we wanted to find, you know, really two ends of the spectrum and everything in between. We wanted to find people with strong cultural identity, you know, who were very kind of aware and sensitive to the culture and had the linguistic fluency similar to mine. And then we also wanted to make sure that, you know, there was representation on the opposite side of the spectrum. You know, truly this has broken the mold. It's unprecedented. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we're looking to improve that, of course. We want to see more women of color, right? We want to see a lot more color on the next season. But, you know, there's so much we can improve on. It's interesting because there's a burden, essentially, in trying to find a way to encapsulate the deaf experience, you know, by using the lens of individuals within one show. And to me, it's impossible, right? Mm. The other thing is, you know, in regards to deaf representation, we have been so starved from mainstream media and representation within it that we have so many hopes and we have, you know, a wish list that is, you know, very heavily weighed down with oppression of all the things that we want inside. And, you know, that's also the beauty of our culture, right? It means that we have so much to give and so much to offer and so much to pull from, which means that we have more stories, right? We couldn't possibly give you everything in season one. That would be impossible. We've got to kind of tease a little.
Yeah. Very relatable stories too. Like I just loved how it was, you know, it was diversity within diversity. It was just, like you said, you gave us everything, you know, and I for one learned so much. But I want to ask you also, you mentioned before tackling very serious issues. Like, you know, you guys talk about abortion, what was it for the cast? Were they open to sharing their stories like this, or was there a hesitation? How are you guys able to get this out of them, and how did they feel about it?
It's a great question. In the beginning, I think there was a lot of hesitation and a lot of you know, guarding, right? Because this is the first time in history that a show has ever been made, you know, specifically about deaf people, with deaf people, you know, behind the camera, really, really working with an authentic lens to really understand our stories. You know, in the process, of course, of working with them, we didn't expect an abortion. We didn't expect, you know, sexual violence or domestic violence. But once we had warmed up and really built a nice rapport of trust, it was purely in agreement with the cast. And our job really became to support them through that process. And those stories are so key. They need to be told. Like you mentioned, they're so incredibly relatable. People can really plug in and see themselves now and how they've handled the situation, right? They can see how these issues are tackled by other people. And those are really vital conversations that we need to be having. I can't tell you just how proud I am of our cast.
Mm. Yeah. I think, you know, this show, I mean, you know, we, like me and Amanda are part of marginalized communities, and you know, people of color, and there's so many underrepresented and marginalized voices out there. And then there are times when we have these blind spots ourselves. And I think the deaf experience is one of them. I think I've been leaning more into that. I've been leaning more into even like going into more disabled, you know, representation and indigenous representation. And it's so interesting to see, like, you know, how, you know, like we're always kind of, not obsessed, but kind of preoccupied with fighting our own battles, you know. It's and we need to, like, I always say that if one of us wins, we all win.
Yeah.
So like I'm so glad that, you know,
definitely,
that a show like Deaf U comes out, and like I see the projects that you have lined up, and I'm like, I can't wait, you know. But like with Deaf View, I mean, I think me and Amanda were talking about it, and it was like, they're like, oh, there's a lot of romantic storylines in it. You know, it's very much like, it's just basically almost a reality show, right? You know, but we're kind of like focusing on these romantic storylines and leaning into them. Was that very much a conscious choice for you and the producers? And did you kind of like purposely stray away from other things? But why did you feel the need to lean into more of the romantic storyline?
Really, when it comes down to it, you know, I feel like everyone wants a little romance, right? Everyone wants to fall in love. You know, everyone wants the experience of you know, being tasted. I mean, that to me was, you know, a really important lens to see our cast through. And also at the same time to really learn about deaf culture and the community and who these people are, right? Instead of, you know, reframing them through the lens of, you know, this preachy PSA after school special. Our culture is this. Our community is that. It would have made things incredibly boring. Yeah. You know, of course, we want to share both of those things, but we had to find the right balance. And romance seemed like a really good strategy to access some of those topics. But there's a lot of love in Deaf View. And yeah, honestly, people are wild.
Okay, also, like, I was, like, looking at, like, when I was watching, I was all, why is everyone so hot? And I'm like...
I like a version of, like, Love Island, but, like, set in a college.
Right.
Well, definitely. I'm glad you mentioned that, because, like, I remember, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, and even, you know, of the 90s, there was always, like, for sitcoms and dramas, there was always that one episode where they had a deaf person or someone in a wheelchair always the one. And I remember, you know, Marley Matlin came out with Children of a Lesser God, and that was like a huge deal. But then, like, I think there are so many moments for underrepresented voices where we think that something's gonna change, like, for instance, like with Children of a Lesser God, or with, you know, Crazy Rich Asians, and then, like, yeah. But, you know, when you were coming up and you were seeing these representations of you, because you mentioned that you really didn't see yourself until Deaf View, you know, would you get frustrated, would you get angry about seeing how the culture was represented? How did you respond to all of these kind of PSA, you know, episodes?
A lot of feelings went into a lot of responses. I think that, you know, Children of a Lesser God was groundbreaking. I mean, we're talking 1986, I think. Just amazing. But, you know, the problem with Children of a Lesser God was that there were no deaf people in the making of it and in its creation, right? You know, it's key that we have more representation, but it's key that we have more deaf creatives who are developing their own content. I mean, so that, you know, 35 years later now, deaf people can be behind in this process, you know? So things like that really did pave the way, of course. My experience over the last 5 years in the Hollywood industry has involved a lot of meetings with a lot of writers, a lot of casting directors, you know, executive producers, and really working with them to try to find, you know, a role within their film or within their content. And the same struggle I hear everywhere. We think you're great. We love you. We want to write you in so bad. But they don't know how, because they don't understand deaf culture. They have no understanding of the deaf community, right? Which is why they need a deaf person in the writer's room to say, hey, this would actually make sense here in this way, right? And that's what we got through Deaf View. I mean, we really took the mold and shattered it. And we said that we weren't going to create any more one-dimensional characters. We were going to show the layers, right? The diversity of our community, so that we can offer writers a better way to really access those things. We're hoping that this show really inspires writers to pull in more deaf talent and to include more deaf people, you know, in front of behind the camera, really to build their experience in Hollywood, so that later we have our own, you know, our own content, our own TV shows, our own films, but really to be able to make whatever we want.
So, like, you mentioned a season two. I should know this because we work at Deadline. Has it been renewed? I'm not sure, or is that kind of like secret?
No. So Netflix has yet to give me a call, but I'm hoping that they're going to call us soon.
Phone.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, honestly, we have so many more layers to go through. Yeah.
I mean, like, so like if for season two, what would you want to get into more? Would you introduce more people? Would you, you know, what would you want to kind of do with season two?
You know, I think season two would offer a much more deeper dive, definitely into elites. And what does elitism mean within the deaf community? I mean, I share a controversial perspective that I'll get back to, but, you know, also Daquan's background and his story and his experience of growing up without any access to sign language and, you know, the impact of that and what it looks like for him on his journey. I just think are so incredible. For me as a deaf person coming from the experience, from the deaf community, I know that we've only scratched the surface and it's already overwhelmingly positive. So we're excited to go deeper. Now back to the topic of elitism, I will tell you, I think it's worth going into deeper because I do see ways in which it can be good, right? We have, you know, elites that definitely come off as a mama bear who want to be protective of our language and our culture, right? I mean, people would coin me as elite simply because my parents are deaf and I went to a deaf school. I also grew up in the community. All of those things are things that I've really embraced as a part of my identity. But it's really more a focus of preserving sign language, which right now is, in fact, at the brink of extinction. And so there is a sense of responsibility that we are the stewards of the language and the culture and the traditions, and that, you know, we have to keep them safe. So it's possible that we come off as a little hostile, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're very, very, very frustrated. Yeah. But I'd love to really explore more of that and see what we have to offer.
I was going to ask about that, because that was one thing that I really found interested, was sort of this group of, it's kind of like what races do. Like we sort of have this, I don't like to say discriminatory, but we have these clickiness within our group, you know.
We're like siloed.
Exactly. There's arguments about, like, especially with me, there's arguments about growing up in America versus growing up in, you know, or like there's a lot of colorism discussions within our community too. That's a big issue. And there's a big
right.
So I wanted to ask you, because I know we could trace back colorism to, like, you know, racism days. Like I wanted to ask you where that stemmed from, the whole elite thing versus somebody like Cheyenne, who's more trying to embrace a new way of doing things. And I'm sorry, I can't remember this other girl's name. I just know she had she had long nails.
Tessa. Tessa. Yes. Yeah. Tessa with the nails.
Sort of having that conflict. I really wanted to understand where that came from.
I would say, to be honest with you, on the show, I relate the most to Tessa. I really wish that I could have seen her really explain more of what makes sense to her and her perspective. You know, I think she has a lot more to say with really great intentions. Now, you know, essentially the conflict comes from Cheyenne coming from a deaf family who went to a mainstream program, right? Mm-hmm. So she's very culturally deaf, right? But she doesn't have the same experience as Tessa, who, you know, went to a large deaf school and in Maryland. And ironically, I'm an alum of the school myself. Mm-hmm. You know, and so she's had this group of friends that's really become ingrained with one another since her kindergarten days. Mm-hmm. Now you take both of them to college and, you know, Cheyenne wants to make new friends, but Tessa already has all of her friends. And yet, you know, they both come from deaf families, right? And now Cheyenne sees that Tessa's had all of this access that she missed out on. And so it does take a shift of perspective there to see that it's about positioning. Of course, Tessa means well. And of course, you know, Cheyenne knows that as an elite, she has a really privileged position in the community, but it's a melding of worlds. And of course there's going to be conflict there. I mean, there's a lot of layers to talk through in that conversation.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, get your opinion. Like, is it possible to sort of bridge that gap to sort of find a balance between preserving the language and also being, I guess, more progressive, what Cheyenne wanted to do.
Right. You know, I definitely think that there's a lot of space there. And, you know, if we have a season two, I really want to dive into how we make those connections, right? And really find, you know, the reasons behind it. I mean, the biggest thing it really is passing down of language, right? But deaf culture you know, as small of a community as we are, if you look at the elites, they're actually the minority within our community, right? 95% of deaf kids out there come from hearing parents. And so, you know, there is another perspective specifically, about Gallaudet University, that it is the one campus on the entire globe in which we have a signing community. It's our haven, right? And, you know, there were a lot of college students like myself who came in, and I would see other people, right, from the rest of the community who would be speaking. And I'd be like, this is the only place that is fully accessible to us, and you're trying to take that away from us, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
On an entirely deaf campus. So a lot of it, I think, is about boundaries and also context dependent, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think it's kind of amazing about the preserving the language. I didn't know that it was kind of on this brink of extinction. It's very interesting. Yeah. We had Amber Ruffin on from her talk show, yeah. And she was talking about what was it? She does signing exact.
It's not
ASL. It's the exact sign language or something like that. I forgot what it's called. And she's like, oh no, yeah, she said no one uses it anymore, and it's kind of archaic. So it's kind of this, it's interesting to see the progression of that language.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's another layer, right? So signed exact English or pidgin signed English aren't actually languages, right? It's essentially, it's a modality of English. It's manually coded English, right? Like a series of English on the hands. So, you know, it's how deaf people were expected to work to fit society, the larger hearing society. But none of us should be in the business of that, right? You should learn ASL, right? And that's really the foundation. But, you know, I mean, that's just my thinking, right? Why am I working to fit into the English?
Yeah, because I remember Amber saying that no one uses it because it's kind of offensive. Exactly.
I feel like I'm such a better person for just talking to you and for even watching the show. Like,
yeah,
so informative.
Definitely.
I have to ask, Niall, is the school, you went to the same school, right?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I did go to the same school as Tessa, yeah.
Yeah, was it like that?
I mean, I've known her since kindergarten.
Okay.
Oh, for real?
yeah. Yep, she's, I mean, you know, Tessa, of course, is so sweet in general. You know, she has a very, very, strong sensibility about her and a very strong cultural identity. And I think a lot of people might find that a bit off-putting, but in fact, she's a strong person.
Mm-hmm. when you were at the college, would you say that you had the same experience as these guys now in Deaf U? Was it as clicky?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
I mean, there's always been a lot of that. I mean, and it hasn't changed. I went to Gallaudet 13 years ago. I mean, in 2007. We're talking, you know, from one to eight generations ago, it's still been the same thing, you know? Okay. Yeah.
That's so crazy. So, anyways, like I said, I think I feel like I'm a better person after watching it, and I encourage everyone to see it if you haven't seen it.
I mean, like it's so enlightening. I mean, I generally like learning about other cultures, and it's like if you don't ask questions, you don't research, you don't watch other people's stories, then what are you doing? You know. And right now, at a time like this, it's kind of like it's time to embrace other cultures besides your own.
And reality TV. Like,
it's reality TV. People are shady. People mess up.
I'm a reality TV queen, and I'm like, this is on point.
it's fun also.
Yeah,
definitely.
But Niall, what, I keep wanting to call you Nico, but I read that you have a twin brother named Nico.
My twin brother is named Nico. Yeah.
Even before.
Actually, funny enough, my mom actually decided. So, like, as you know, I'm a twin. So she said the first person born would be Niall, and then the second one would be Nico. I was actually supposed to be Nico, but after my mom had us, she was like, you don't look like a Nico. So she gave me that.
Oh!
Stop it. I was like, I keep calling him Nico for something. And I like looked and I was like, oh, he has a brother named Nico. I didn't even know that. Like how weird.
Yeah.
And you were supposed to be Nico. So,
right.
But Niall, you have a couple of other projects that have been announced. What can you tell us about the Daniel Day Kim comedy that you're doing with him? And then you also have is it yes, deaf president or deaf president, please?
Yeah.
Yep, deaf president now.
Yeah, now.
Right. So I have another Netflix project actually as well. It's a documentary film that specifically follows one boy named Amari, who goes to Maryland Deaf School, where I went as well. And it's a very, very interesting doc. I would highly recommend it. I also have a scripted series. It's a half-hour comedy with Daniel Day Kim's production company that is very loosely based on my own life and my own experience as a deaf person, really navigating and hearing worlds. It's a lot of irony to it. Oh, I wish I could say more, but...
Are you starring it? You're starring it.
I am. I'll be leading in it, which is really exciting. You know, I'm playing myself, so very inspiring. It'll be a lot of fun. But yeah, and then I have the Deaf President Now film, which was a historical event that happened in 1988 at Gallaudet University. Was essentially the deaf disability civil rights movement. Paved the way for the passage of the ADA. It was against the administration, who at that point, after 124 years of being in existence, had chosen another hearing president, essentially, in a move of real grotesque paternalism. Like I said, it did offer the passage of the ADA, which has given us so many rights and really protected so much through legislation. So we're really looking forward to it. And for that, I'm working with Jonathan King, who's fantastic. I mean, he's produced such, you know, things like The Green Book and Roma, and, you know, This Is Us. And he's so incredible. It's so great to be able to work with him. And he's an amazing creator, and he's just an amazing guy. I'm so looking forward to working with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's those kinds of stories that I love, like that documentary.
I'm so excited. I can't wait.
Yeah, definitely.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, honestly, the doc is really interesting. The Netflix doc is really interesting. I'll be really excited to hear your opinion. Okay. Perhaps next time I'm on the show after you watch it, we can talk.
No, we'll have you on again.
Just to wrap up, we like to kind of end with a funny, like, random question segment we call the FAQs or the FAQs. So your first question is, what is one TV show or movie that you would love that people might not expect that you like? That you love that people might not expect that you like?
Ooh, that's a good one. The Bachelor?
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's my guilty pleasure. You know, I watch it all the time with my mom.
Wow, I never got into The Bachelor for but I love dating shows, which is weird, but I just never got into The Bachelor.
Wait, do you watch The Bachelorette, Amanda?
I don't watch any of it. I watch Love Island.
Do you watch Bachelorette too?
Just Bachelor?
No. I mean, I watched The Bachelorette and Bachelor both, for sure. I thought for sure you would have seen it. Honestly, it's trash TV. I love it. People are like, why do you watch this? I'm like, because it's amazing. Watch it.
I think the best part of those, like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, I mean, I've only watched a couple or barely watched, is when they introduce everyone and their jobs. It's so, their jobs are like, what? Yes. So Niall,
oh man, so many random jobs and random positions that they mention. They're so proud of it. You're like, what?
You're like,
millennial jobs popping up on The Bachelor is one of my favorites.
So Niall, you've modeled, you danced, you produced, you act. Is there a hidden talent that people might not know you have?
Ooh, a hidden talent. Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm really good at jumping off a diving board. I can do a lot of tricks off a diving board.
And that's hard. That's really hard.
Yeah, that is. Wait, have you thought about competing in the Olympics?
I mean, I haven't considered it. No, but my university, Gallaudet University, had a diving team, and you know, they would ask me to try out for the team because they knew that I was, you know, I mean, at that time I had a lot of fun and I kind of knew I was the best. But honestly, I just wanted to party.
Well, I also know that you did drag once with Miss Cracker. I'm a big RuPaul's Drag Race fan, so seeing you in drag was really fun. So maybe that's another talent you have.
Future drag queen. Oh yeah. Yeah, honestly, that experience was cathartic. It was such an expression. It was so much fun.
Dino's our resident drag queen.
Gray actually was my interpreter on the segment. It was great. He was really into it.
Okay. What is your favorite curse word?
Oh. Oh fuck! Fuck! Let me
just. Okay.
Say anything on here.
Let me think of one.
Because now we're gonna learn it in sign language.
In sign, it's motherfucker. Yeah, this is it right here.
So, like,
yeah, it's mother. This is a sign for mother. Yep, and then fucker, motherfucker.
Oh, that's fun.
Does it matter? Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Like motherfucker.
Yeah. Right or left, motherfucker. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. Okay, good.
So fun. Yep.
We learned something.
Middle finger up to my new chin.
I will be saying that, you guys. Just look out.
I want to be saying that, motherfucker.
We'll know what it means.
Well, this is like, you know.
Yeah, but pretty universal. Yeah.
So now, if there was one movie or one TV show you could remake with an entire deaf cast, which would it be?
You know, probably Breakfast Club.
Oh, that would be fun.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah,
that would be good. That's a good one. Okay.
Yeah, I think
would you rather spend 2 years with your soulmate only to have them die and you never love again, or spend your life with somebody nice you settled for? This is a hard one.
Oh, that is so impossible. What? Okay. One dies and I settle. I mean, it'd be nice to have conversation.
Yeah.
What do you pick, Amanda?
I think honestly, because I don't like being alone, I might pick the second one, even though the first.
Yeah,
one,
I mean actually, that, right?
I would really want to be with a soulmate. Right? I mean, I don't know. Actually, I probably would do soulmate, to be honest.
I would do soulmate too, because I like my space, and I'm all, after 2 years, I'll be all okay. You could leave.
Right. I mean, that's the other thing, right? You get your whole apartment back.
Yeah. So now our final question is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, or creator, that is not in the mainstream or just not that widely well known that you think people need to know about and deserves more recognition from Hollywood and the industry?
Ooh.
There's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot. But from my community specifically, I would say Lauren Ridloff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lauren Ridloff is now, you know, as a deaf person, she's now the first Marvel superhero.
Oh, that's right. And the Eternals, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was in the Eternals movie. And, you know, honestly, I'm just hoping that everything just explodes for her after that.
Yeah. Especially that cast in general is just so inclusive. And I want to say that her character in the comic, I think they gender flipped that character. I'm not 100% sure, though.
Right, they did, yeah. It was supposed to be a male, right? It was written for this big, bulky, like, tough guy.
Yeah.
And they switched it to a female of color who's deaf.
Which is so, like, there's so many intersections there, which is, like, amazing, which is incredible, so which I love.
Yeah. And that's Chloe's movie, right?
Yeah, Chloe Zhao's movie. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm excited about that. Niall, excited about all the stuff that you have coming
out. I know!
Thank you so much for being on here. Like, you are a gem. Everybody,
thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it. This has been so fun with you, too.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Oh, yeah, and then so hopefully... hopefully in the future we can meet in person and do, you know... this again. But we were so excited, like, as soon as they said, you know, they were like, oh, would you like to have Niall on? And I immediately said, of course, you know, so I'm glad we could make this happen.
I'm glad we made this happen, Niall. Yeah. Thank you again for stopping by. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you guys. See you later.
Have a great week.
You too. Bye bye.
The cat sat on the mat.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.